The weather may be perfect, but across the barbed wire strewn borderlands, the existence of the occupied territories of northern Cyprus throws a shadow across this beautiful broken-backed island. Cyprus seems to have been allowed to become just another of the seemingly intractable situations we humans are so adept at creating. Where is the solution to be found? The hurt dominates the popular psyche. The sense of loss sits heavy on the people. The dark legacy of Turkish invasion, civil upheaval, the painful divisions of an almost physical force. An almost physical force. There will be no peace in the hearts of the people of Cyprus till there is resolution, the righting of not-so-ancient wrongs. The grim memories of the upheavals of the 70s haunt the nation. Emotions are right on the surface. The tourist towns of Limassol and Larnaca and the vibrant little resorts that necklace the shoreline may bump and grind to the bright rhythms of pleasure and hedonism, but there is a deep-rooted sorrow in the nation that no amount of hip-hop or garage music can dispel. This is a house divided against itself, and the wound is raw and weeping. When I went there, I chose to stay at Platras, following the road up 100 twists and turns to the heart of the Troodos Mountains to reach the village. Platras serves as a minor ski resort in the winter, but for the rest of the year works extremely well as a great base from which to explore the island and its astonishing heritage. To visit Cyprus and to settle, as many people do, only for the developed coastal strip would be to miss the mountains, the waterfalls and the forests. It would mean losing out on so much that is of the essence of the island's story and culture. When I was there, I had a great room, room number 3 at the Hotel Pendeli, provided a quite fabulous view from the balcony, sweeping down the valley into the dusk, dappled evening sunlight on the trees. The gorgeous pool, still warm and inviting in late October, was entirely mine to enjoy. While kindly staff were attentive, without being oppressive, and a mere 100 metres along the road, an authentic village restaurant offered a menu rich in local delicacies. The slow-cooked lamb hit the spot. I had it several times. Being based in the mountains involved a 30-minute drive through the hairpins in order to reach the dual carriageway that accessed the main towns. But at least the Cypriots have the good grace to drive on the left-hand side of the road, a legacy of the years of British rule and connection with the island, and the journey alongside pine trees, lochs and sweeping hills to link up with the main roads was no hardship. It put a healthy distance between the manufactured liveliness of the resorts and the real story of the island. As we read, Cyprus has the footprints of Paul and Barnabas impressed deep in its religious consciousness. Early in the Christian story, these heroes of the faith arrived with the gospel and made their mark. Tucked somewhat incongruously behind the main street in Paphos, cheek by jowl with discos, trinket shops and pubs, is the garden where Paul was tied to a pillar and flogged for his presumptive Christian faith. The quiet of the ancient basilica built to honour this event was broken when I was there by a group of German worshippers who'd come to pay homage to the saint and to reflect upon his courageous witness. Worshipping with them offered a stark and moving contrast to the bustle of the streets, the clamour of the cafes, and the indifference of the holidaymakers to this vital chunk of history. A moment in their story that the Cypriot people hold dear and which the locals make sure is engraved on the collective consciousness of the whole community. Paul's suffering and patient faith so impressed the governor of the day that he himself converted to Christianity. A decision that opened the floodgates to almost universal acceptance of Christianity throughout the island. Barnabas was appointed bishop and became the patron saint of Cyprus. It's a source of both delight and sorrow that the bones of St. Barnabas have a home in Cyprus, at Salamis in the occupied zone, accessible only to those willing to break the unspoken taboo against travel there. In solidarity with the grieving citizens of Cyprus, I chose not to go. Quite literally, however, the high point of this visit I had to Cyprus as part of my study leave was calling at the monastery of Stavrovouni, which perches impossibly on the very top of a mountain in the middle of the flat coastal plain, dominating the skyline and offering views of astonishing sweep and beauty. It's also very awkward to get to, perched there around 53 bends it takes to reach it. But the views, which are spectacular, are as nothing when compared to the kindly welcome, the generous, charitable, gracious, deep spirituality of the monks, whose closed and cloistered life has in no way diminished their deep Christian awareness of the importance of hospitality and showing genuine respect and love towards their visitors. As well as a commitment to a life of prayer, worship and study and physical work, the monks of Stavrovouni are the guardians of a very special relic, a piece of the cross, brought to Cyprus by Constantine's mother, who had sought it out in the Holy Land, established its unblemished provenance as the genuine article, and who gave it for safekeeping to the monks of Stavrovouni. The relic is encased in silver and has pride of place in the ornate little chapel that provides the heartbeat of their devotion and piety. To spend time with these men of great spirituality is to be made aware of a crucial distinction between their lives and the life of the average parish minister, beset by busyness and meetings and all the barnacles and clutter of church life. Ministers talk about God, the monks talk to God. Thank God they have time to pray for the likes of us, or we would all be surely doomed. The men who live there have long beards. They pray for the world, they pray for the church, they pray for peace. They get up at 3 a.m. to pray. I got talking to a wonderful monk who was so kind and interested, gracious and truly holy. And he understood that sometimes we find it hard to pray. So he told me about a prayer anyone can say, anytime, anywhere, called the Jesus Prayer. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. Simple. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. That's all it takes to remind us of him, of us, of him and us. It was wonderful to meet this holy and good man and to be humbled by his close walk with God, because it really is sometimes a lot easier to talk about God than to talk to him. It was a wonderful place, a wonderful conversation, an amazing experience, and the prayer is still there to be said, to be prayed, wherever, whenever. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. He promised to pray for me and my family, that monk, whose name I don't know. And all those years I've felt the gentle benediction of his faithful prayers. When I was being interviewed for the job in Geneva, I was asked what had kept me going in ministry over those nearly 40 years at that time. And I explained, there was a woman in Dunbar called Mrs. Glasgow who prayed for me every day. And my Aunt Jeanette prays for me every day. And there's a wee woman in East Kilbride, whose name I don't know, who prays for me every day. And a nameless monk at Stavrovouni in Cyprus. He prays for me every day. Let's sing, Lord Jesus Christ, you have come to us.